You are listening to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto and CFBU 103.7 FM in St. Catharines. I am your host, Erin O'Sullivan. Today we are going to be talking to Patrick McDonnell, creator of the comic strip Mutts. Now, most of you have probably seen the strip, and unless you've got a dried up, shriveled old walnut for a heart, you have probably bawled your eyes out over the series called Shelter Stories. We're going to be talking to Patrick about his career as an artist, his interest in animals, and how he blends those two things. And after Patrick, we are going to be talking to Carrie Cronin and Laurie Morrison about the second annual Niagara Veg Fest, which is coming to St. Catharines, Ontario on Sunday, June the 2nd. And even if you live in a land far, far away and have no hope of attending this event, we will also be talking to the organizers about exactly what goes into organizing this kind of event, maybe to give you some tips on how to go about holding a veg fest in your own area. So without further ado, I would like to welcome Patrick McDonnell to the show, creator of the comic strip Mutts. Patrick, welcome to Animal Voices.
Hi, Erin. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. So to get us started, please just share with our audience a little bit of your history.
Well, like most cartoonists, I wanted to be a cartoonist since I was probably around 3 or 4 years old, 5 years old. I mean, for me in particular, it was Peanuts. I was in love with Snoopy and Charlie Brown, and always thought if I could give back any of the joy that Charles Schulz gave me, that would be a good thing to do in life. So I went to art school, and when I first came out of art school, I actually did magazine illustrations first. I worked for Sports Illustrated and Time Magazine and most of the major magazines. But in all my illustrations, there was a little white dog with a circle around his eye who was kind of my little mascot character. And I didn't know it at the time, but an art director told me I was drawing a Jack Russell Terrier. And this was before Eddie, so they weren't that popular. I didn't know what that breed was, but I looked it up in a book, and boy, it was sure enough, that was the dog I was drawing.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually got me a Jack Russell Terrier, a little dog named Earl, and Earl inspired me to try what I always wanted to do, was to try a comic strip, and I did a comic strip based on my own dog. So it's kind of funny, the cartoon dog I was drawing became a real dog, and then the real dog became the inspiration for the cartoon of Mutts, and that's how Mutts started.
So what was the timeline like? Like, how long were you doing illustrations for magazines? Was it just like a couple of years?
Yeah, really long time, actually. A good 10 years I was doing magazine illustrations, but still thinking about, you know, my first love, which is to do a comic strip. But, you know, actually, good news, bad news, I had a successful illustration career and was keeping me busy. But my poor wife had to hear me all the time saying, I really need to do a cartoon. And finally she said, why don't you take a couple of weeks off and try a comic strip? And I took her advice and did that. And I got very lucky because they look at thousands and thousands of comic strips, but they pick very few. But I got lucky and King Features took a chance on Mutts.
So you say they, and then you mentioned King Features. So what's that exactly?
King Features is my syndicate. There's a handful of syndicates that actually, you give the comic to and they supply them to the newspapers.
Okay, interesting. So would you say that was your big break career-wise in terms of your comic strip?
Oh, yeah, that was it. That was the beginning. You know, I started out in, 70-something papers, and today I'm in over 700 newspapers.
So you already mentioned Earl. Now, I believe that you have other companion animals, too. Now, did they feature or did they inspire your work at all?
Well, you know, it's funny. When I started out, when I was doing the very initial sketches for the strip, I knew Earl was going to be the star. And, of course, his guardian, Ozzy. And that's, any of the strips with Ozzy and Earl are pretty autobiographical of me and Earl. And I started playing around with, well, what is Earl going to do and what kind of characters could he meet? And in my sketchbook, I played with the idea that he would meet the cat next door. And I thought that was good for maybe a week or 2 weeks worth of jokes. But just the way cats usually are, Mooch the cat walked into the strip and took over. And that's how Mooch came into the comic strip. And Mooch, actually, it's funny, when I was growing up, because I was in love with Snoopy, I wanted a dog my whole life as a kid, but my mom and dad, I guess, didn't think my siblings and I were ready for a dog, so we just had cats. So Mooch was a combination of the different cats I knew and loved over the years.
So tell us a bit about what the strip is about for those people that actually aren't terribly familiar with it.
Well, obviously it's about our companion animals, the little animals that we share our lives with. And, I try my best to keep them animal-like. Obviously they talk, but, I really try to see the world through their eyes. And I think it's about that special bond we have with our animals. So, the human characters are there too. But I think, at the heart of it, I think the strip's about kindness and empathy. In seeing the world through their eyes, I just became more and more aware of how tough it is on this planet for animals. And that slowly became part of the strip too.
So talk a little bit more about that. Like, were you always interested in animals? And were you always interested in, as you say, the sort of plight of animals and the bad things that happen to animals? Or was it merely, well, I shouldn't say merely, but was it at the beginning more just about a sort of person and his dog?
It did start out more of me just wanting to do a great comic strip. And I thought my own dog, Earl, was just such an inspiration. He had such a joy of life. And I felt like if I could capture that on the page, it would be a good comic strip. And also, if I could capture that bond we had, I thought people could relate to that. And, I've always had a compassion and concern for animals. And I have been vegetarian for probably, 30 years. But I didn't necessarily feel like that was going to be a big part of the strip. But like I said, when I, in the strip, I did want to see the world through their eyes. And just thinking about what animals go through, it just slowly evolved to be part of the strip. And you mentioned shelter stories in the beginning. And I think that kind of was the start of it. After doing the strip for a year or so, it was great that Earl and Mooch had loving companion guardians. But, I was always thinking about the dogs and cats who are in shelters and are waiting for that opportunity like Earl and Mooch had. So I started playing with the idea of how could I do some stories about shelter animals. And at the time I was playing with sketches in my notebook, I got a letter from the Humane Society of the United States, and they wanted to let me know that the first week in November is Animal Shelter Appreciation Week, and could I do something? And I said, wow, that's the perfect opportunities for these cartoons I was doing about shelter animals. So I did the first week of shelter animals in November to celebrate Animal Shelter Appreciation Week. And, I got such a good response, and I enjoyed doing it that, since then, twice a year, I do 2 weeks a year on shelter stories.
So you started off with it largely being, a comic strip about the bond between humans and animals. And you said that your attitude towards animals and your knowledge started to evolve as time went on. How did your audience and even your editors react to some of, I don't know, maybe your more heartbreaking comics? Like some of them, especially Guard Dog, just rips your heart out when you see him. And did people react positively to this stuff, or did you ever get some negative reactions where people were like, stop, you're killing me?
Amazingly, I really haven't gotten any negative reactions. The negative reactions I get, is what you just said. I get people who do love animals and do say that, can I please free Guard Dog? And, it makes them sad. But I think they, too, understand, why I'm doing it, and that kind of feel like it's, a bit of a public service. I still feel like Guard Dog has a job to do. And if anyone reads my strip and, decides to bring their dog inside, I feel like that would be a great thing. And on occasion, I get letters about that. But, my editors have been really good. They let me do what I do. And actually, I think all the strips that are a little more touching and speak to those issues, I think, the feedback I get from them, people really appreciate them. I mean, the greatest thing, and I get them quite often, is people writing me saying that I inspired them to go to the shelter and get their new best friend. And that makes my day.
Yeah, I actually noticed on your Facebook page, people will send in their pictures and tell the story about how they adopted a shelter dog or cat inspired by your strip. So.
Yeah, and a few years ago, we did a whole book of my cartoons, and we asked readers to send in photos and stories about how they adopted their cat, dog, or bird, or hamster, or, And we put together a whole book of those called Shelter Stories.
So looking at your animal advocacy work in your comic strip, we have the heartbreaking ones that, even though they're heartbreaking, they're still very much about animal welfare in the traditional sense of dogs and cats in animal shelters. But you also have some that sort of push the envelope into what some people would call animal rights. And the one that sticks in my mind the most is the one that I call the Sweet Dreams strip. And do you know which one I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
So could you describe that for the audience?
Well, in that strip, it starts with Millie, Mooch's guardian, petting Mooch, who's asleep on his little cat bed, and she says, "Sweet dreams." And then it goes on to, if I remember right, I think a chimpanzee in a lab in a cage dreaming of being free in the jungle, and a hen in a cage at a factory farm dreaming of running free in the grass. The same with a pig in a gestation crate. Then it ends with guard dog wishing someone was petting him like Mooch and saying sweet dreams to him. And yeah, that probably was one of my tougher ones, but also probably one of my most requested ones on our website. And I think, you know, a lot of people were moved by that comic.
So have you ever had an idea for a strip where you thought maybe it was a bit too much, so you decided not to do it?
Well, you know, when there's so many things going on with animals, you know, 12 years ago, I was asked to join the board of the Humane Society of the United States, which I've been there now for 12 years. And, you know, it's just a wonderful organization. But, boy, I really do hear the worst of what's going on all over on all the animals. And, boy, so many animals have it so tough on this planet that, boy, if I was to tell their stories, the newspapers probably wouldn't even print it.
Yet, despite all the bad stuff that you hear about, the strip does manage to stay, despite its heartbreaks, pretty upbeat. Now, would you say that's just your disposition, that you're maybe just naturally inclined to stay positive?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, there's so many great people doing so many great things, and you just have to be optimistic and positive. I feel good we'll win out, because it's the, you know, love will conquer all.
Now, I'm wondering if you can tell us a bit about what a day in the life of a comic strip artist is like. Like, we will often interview people who have, say, written scholarly papers on animal issues, or who run shelters, or who run animal advocacy campaigns, and we ask them, so what does your average day look like working on your project? So, what's a day in the life of a comic strip artist like?
Well, we don't get out much. You know, it's funny, as I said earlier, I wanted to be a cartoonist since I was a little kid, but I don't think it ever really dawned on me what that meant to draw a cartoon every single day. You know, there's no vacation in comic strip land. So there's a lot of work. I mean, I've gotten a little faster at it. I've been doing it for 19 years now, but you need to do 365 cartoons a year. So at this point in my life, I work in batches of 3 weeks at a time. So I write 3 weeks, and then I pencil 3 weeks, letter 3 weeks, and ink 3 weeks, and then color the Sunday pages. So it's sort of like a little factory to a certain extent.
Wow, you still do all that stuff yourself.
Yeah, I do.
I thought that a lot of that would be automated or something like
no,
that.
No, believe it or not, it's still a one-man production here. So, you know, depending on what day of the week it is, you know, when I write strips, I usually keep on writing until I have 3 weeks worth, and then I stop, and then I start the actual process of producing them. So if it's a writing day, I'm usually at my drawing board. And, you know, the secret to that is to really just get out of the way of the ideas. I mean, just you get into some kind of meditative zone. It really is almost like a meditation, and hopefully the ideas come. You have to have a lot of faith that the ideas are going to come. So it depends on where I'm at in the process. But I get up very early. I'm an early riser, so usually like 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and I like being at the drawing board at that time because the day's really quiet. And I usually work until like 5. I put in a whole day and work a lot of weekends. And and when I hand in the work, then I catch up on other things because I also do children's books. And I'm actually in the middle of trying to make a Mutz movie. So I'm writing a script for a Mutz movie.
Oh, really? That was actually one of my questions because I know that you're a fan of Charles Schulz. I have a terrible time saying that name. Of Charlie Brown fame, of course. And I love those Charlie Brown specials when I was a kid. So I was going to ask, is there any chance of a Mutz TV special? So you've got a movie in the works.
Yeah. Just fairly recently, Fox Entertainment has an option to do a Mutz feature-length film. And they're trusting me to write it, and I just handed in the first draft, and it's moving along, and I think the Mutz readers will really be happy with it because it's got a nice animal message and it's funny, and I think it's going to translate well. And I agree, I'm a big fan of those Charlie Brown specials too. I think the Christmas special really captured the spirit of Peanuts, and I think that's what we're going to do with this Mutz movie, to really just capture the spirit.
Yeah, I wonder if you learned about tugging at the heartstrings from Charles Schulz's pathetic tree. I always felt so bad for that poor tree.
Well, you know, I learned a lot from Charles Schulz. He was my inspiration and hero, and I tell you, the greatest thing about becoming a cartoonist is I did get the chance to meet and become friends with my hero, Charles Schulz. You know, cartooning is just a magical thing. I mean, I think when it works, it really works. And to this day, it still amazes me that these little black and white drawings could feel so alive. And that was Peanuts. You know, the really great cartoonist, Peanuts. And I'm a big fan of Crazy Cat. And to me, those little black and white drawings are just so filled with life. And they're really good cartoonists, too, I think, did play with all emotions. I mean, you know, obviously, you want your strip to be funny, and that's the main objective. But I think it's like any of the arts. I think you're allowed to do something dramatic or sad or tragic, too, and it all works.
So I'm going to start talking about some of the individual characters in the Mutz strip. You've already introduced us to Earl, and that was based on your dog, and he's the little Jack Russell-esque mutt with the big heart. And Mooch is the feline pal, the kitty that sort of walked in and took over everything. And then you have Ozzie, which is Earl's guardian. And then you've got Millie, which is Mooch's guardian. But then you've got a whole host of other characters, many of which have a sort of animal-friendly message. Now, I want to talk about my favorite one, and that's, of course, Guard Dog. So can you tell the audience a bit about Guard Dog?
Yeah, well, you know, when I first started doing Mutz, you know, it was Earl and Mooch, and they were walking around their little neighborhood or whatever, and it dawned on me that maybe they needed some kind of antagonist, a villain character. So in my sketchbook, I started drawing, your typical cartoon bulldog, some really kind of nasty-looking, mean-looking big dog. And I started playing with that character, saying, oh, yeah, this could be, someone who gives Mooch and Earl a hard time. And cartoonists always use this little visual cliches for different things. And so I put a big stud collar on him to make him look tougher. And then I drew a chain on him to make him look, aggressive and scary. And then once I looked at that drawing of the dog with the chain on him, I was like, oh, yeah, no wonder he's mad and angry. He's chained, And then I just thought that's a deeper character than just a villain. So my villain became sort of the tragic character in Mutz, and I thought he would be an interesting new character, and that's how Guard Dog started. And like I said, a lot of people asked me to free him, and he's definitely going to be free. Matter of fact, I already wrote the story. Someday I am going to free him, but for now he still has a job to do, and that is to hopefully get people to bring their own dogs. And whenever I draw him in my notebooks or when I do talks, I always draw him without the chain.
Oh, nice. So we can pretend that he's acting. Whenever I open the paper, I have to squint my eyes because I know that if I see him, I'm going to be a wreck for at least a half an hour or so. So another one of them, actually two, which is Chickpea and Chickpea's brother, which are an adopted set of cats.
Yeah, I introduced them in shelter stories, and I thought it would be good to do a weak story because, so many animals in the shelter kind of, are siblings or, there's dogs that were owned by someone else who have to, for whatever reason, leave them at the shelter. And it's always nice when someone will adopt, a pair. So I thought it would be a nice story to talk about two little cats that were siblings and hoped to be adopted together. But the story line for their first week was they were both hoping the other one would get adopted and find a nice home. And boy, I ended the first week of that where they didn't get adopted. They were still hoping they would be adopted. And boy, I did get a lot of letters from people saying, please, you know, they couldn't take it. You know, please adopt them. So a couple of months later, I did bring back Chickpea and Chickpea's brother, and they did get adopted by the same person and managed to stay together, which made a lot of people happy.
Now, you've also got a fish, and I wonder at whether or not the mainstream audience, if I can call them that, would necessarily be inclined to sympathize with a fish. But you have a fish as a very sympathetic character, and I think his name is Sid.
Yeah, you know, boy, I haven't done Sid in quite a while, but in the beginning of this strip, Sid was a character, and I just, again, always found it a little sad. One little fish in one small bowl. So it was just to kind of talk about his life and how small it was and dreaming of being in the ocean. But, you know, I did that early on in this trip, and actually was my editor, who was always wondering how many jokes am I going to be able to come up with just the fish in a bowl. So in the beginning, it was sort of just a challenge from him that I did one, like, every 2 months there'd be a Sid joke. And I think he was right. Eventually, I ran out of Sid jokes, and he's only in this trip very rare. But I guess I'm due. I have to do a Sid joke soon.
Yes, now we must have a Sid joke. I'm going to be looking. And now, of course, if I see one, I'm going to be thinking, oh, that Sid joke is there because of me. So the next character, and we'll see if I can pronounce this right, is Stinky Puddin, a.k.a. Jules.
Yeah, Stinky Puddin. Yeah, Stinky Puddin was a little lost cat that Earl and Mooch discovered in a garbage can. Mooch smelled him and said, I'm going to name him Stinky. And Earl thought that was not a good name and should name him something sweet like Puddin. And then Mooch came up with Stinky Puddin. But Stinky's sort of my animal advocate character in this trip. You know, he's a little striped tabby cat and kind of identifies with tigers. So he's always on the mission to, you know, tigers are disappearing on our planet. So it's Stinky's mission to try to save the tigers. And he also worries about the seals in Canada. And so he's the character who kind of is my animal advocate character.
Yeah, and I've noticed that the strip advocates for, again, like I know I already mentioned this, but some real contentious, again, in the mainstream sort of animal issues like seal hunting and fur. And I think there was even a mention of sea shepherd, for example. And generally speaking, you would say that people don't give you a hard time about it.
You know, amazing. I think I always try to do it with some kind of kindness and not try to be too preachy about it. So it's been very nice. I haven't gotten too many letters about that. No.
Well, then not to get all grand about it, but that does sort of suggest something about the power of art to convey messages in a way that doesn't upset people.
Yeah, well, you know, I think cartoons can do that because, you know, people either read them every morning on their computer or in their newspaper, and after a while, they sort of become almost like family and friends. And I mean, as long as you do it correctly, I think you can have discussions like that, and people don't get upset by it.
Now, there was one more character that I wanted to refer to, and I can't remember her name, but she is a psychic. She's an animal psychic. And I thought that was a really interesting choice of character, because I guess it's sort of a means of getting inside the animals' heads and allowing for communication between humans and animals in a comic world that really wasn't set up to allow that kind of communication. And it was a really neat device. So can you talk about that a bit?
Yeah, actually, her name is Ms. Lulu, animal psychic. And yeah, just what you said, I thought it was an interesting way for Ozzy and Millie and the human characters to maybe hear what Earl and Mooch and all the animal characters were thinking. I thought she would be a good source for them to find out what their cat and dog are really thinking. So, but she's another character I haven't used in a while. Thanks for reminding me. I need to bring Miss Lulu back. And if I can say one more thing about Stinky Puddin, I mean, you know, it's funny how life works, but, you know, Stinky Puddin being my animal advocate character, I did a strip a few years back where Stinky was talking to another feral cat named Noodles, and he was talking about compassion fatigue, which a lot of shelter workers get when you get compassion fatigue. And Noodles asked him how he survives compassion fatigue, and Stinky said that his autographed picture of Jane Goodall helps. And when that strip appeared in the newspaper, I got a call from the Jane Goodall Institute, and they wanted to use that strip on their website. And I said, of course, you could do anything you want with it. And then I said, you know, I'd like to give Jane the original drawing. Could I mail it to your institute? And they said that Jane actually was going to be in New York next week, and I live in New Jersey. And they said, why don't you just hand it to her? So I had the, you know, Stinky gave me the the honor and pleasure to meet Jane Goodall. And at that meeting, we talked about doing a book. And I went back home and reread Jane's autobiography, Reasons for Hope. And that inspired me to do a children's book about Jane's childhood. And that book came out 2 years ago called Me, Jane. So Stinky helped me meet Jane and helped produce a children's book because of that.
Wow. And could you also talk a bit more about that children's book and also your other children's books? I guess if Me, Jane is about Jane Goodall, it kind of goes without saying that there's a strong animal advocacy message in it. But what about the other ones?
Well, you know, I've done 8 children's books, and the first 4 actually had the Mutz characters. One's called The Gift of Nothing. One actually stars Stinky, and it's called Hug Time. And that one, Stinky decides he's going to go around the world and hug all the endangered animals to let them know somebody cares. So that had a strong animal message. The other one was called South. That's about Mooch helping a bird who can't fly anymore migrate south. And then I did this book on Jane Goodall's childhood, which was a real pleasure to do. And, you know, when I went home and reread her autobiography, one of the first things in this book is a picture of Jane as like a 1.5-year-old with a stuffed chimpanzee doll. And like when you read her story, it was just like it was fate. It was meant to be. And once I saw that drawing, I said, well, that's the book. So the book talks about Jane's childhood of having this stuffed chimpanzee that she carried around. And as a child, she would read the Tarzan books and Dr. Doolittle and dream about living in Africa talking to animals. And, you know, so it's a short little book about, you know, Jane dreaming that, and then at the end of the book, her dream coming true as an adult.
So where did the interest in children's books come from?
You know, just the way I always wanted to be a cartoonist. I mean, they're so linked together, you know. They're both tell stories with words and pictures. So, you know, I was also a big fan of Winnie the Pooh and Dr. Seuss and all those great books, and that was something I always wanted to do. And just like the comics, you know, I was probably doing the comic strip for 10 years, telling my wife, I really need to do a children's book. And again, my wife said, watch this thing. It was a little tougher to find time when you do a daily comic strip. Time is tough to find. But I did find some time and did The Gift of Nothing first, and just really enjoyed the process. You know, I mean, I love doing the comic strip, but, you know, everything's always the same size. It's always just black and white. You know, there's not much room to play. But with the children books, I get to, you know, do different sizes and use watercolor and, you know, get to have a little fun with art. So I've been doing both now for about 10 years.
So do you have kids to bounce these things off of?
Boy, just my dog and cat. No kids. But plenty of nieces and nephews.
Oh, nice. So you have a captive audience to do test runs on.
Yep.
So can you talk a little bit more? You said that you were on the board of directors for the Humane Society of the United States and have been for a while. So what's your role there?
Well, I mean, as a board member, we have 2 meetings a year, and then we have quite a few phone call meetings, you know, on different committees. And we help pick the CEO, who is Wayne Pacelli, who's just the greatest, the great CEO, and has done so much to help animals. And, you know, we just keep on top of everything and have all our board duties. And, it really helped the strip, too. I mean, it inspires the strip just seeing, you know, not only the worst of what humans can do, but the best of what humans can do. You know, all the saving puppies from puppy mills, and, you know, it's uplifting. Every time I come back from a meeting, I always feel like we all could do more.
So now that the audience has heard all about Mutz and the great animal messages in the strip and in the children's books, can you maybe tell people what kind of Mutz products are available and where they can get them?
Well, you know, First, if you want to see much, there's muchcomics.com, and you could actually get the daily strip sent to your computer first thing in the morning if you sign up for that. We also have a Much Comics on Facebook. It's a really fun Facebook. It's fun to see what the readers say, and we put up strips and different news about Much. And then there's the latest Much collection was called Bonk, and there'll be a new one coming out in September. And the latest children's book I did was called The Monster's Monster. And you can get those on, you know, Amazon or any bookstore, hopefully. And hopefully there's going to be a movie, but it's going to be a CGI movie. It's the same company that does Ice Age. And, you know, unfortunately, those movies take about 3 years to make. So it's Much movies at least 2 years in the making. So it won't be out soon, but keep an eye out for it. We'll be posting news about the movie as it starts to be made on our website, muchcomics.com.
And is there a collection of just the animal advocacy aspects of Mutts?
Well, there's a book called Shelter Stories Love Guarantee that has all the shelter stories. But as far as like the other topics, there's not one yet, but we're planning on doing one. So keep an eye out for that.
So do you have a favorite Mutts character?
You know, you kind of have to love them all. Earl holds a very dear place in my heart because he was based on, you know, my own Jack Russell, who lived to be 19 years old. He passed away a few years ago, but God lived to 19. And so every time I look at Earl, I just think of the real Earl. But, you know, I have to like Mooch only because, you know, it's cliche when they say the characters kind of write themselves, but Mooch always helps me when I'm writing because he's such a fun character and a silly character. I can just start sketching him in any situation, and he usually finds something funny to say. So I always like Mooch.
And is that sock obsession real?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's funny. Yeah, Mooch is obsessed with his little pink sock. And you'd be surprised how many photographs I've got from people's cats with a pink sock. So tapped into something. I don't know.
We are almost out of time, but for the last couple of minutes, I am going to ask you to freestyle a bit. Basically, just share with the audience any final thoughts you'd like to share. Maybe some animal advocacy tips. Actually, because it really seems to me that the mode of animal advocacy that you've created with Mutts is a very positive one, one that allows you to broach upsetting and controversial topics, apparently without ticking people off. And as a person who's been an animal advocate for a long, long time, I can tell you that that is comparatively rare. So on behalf of everyone who wants to help animals, I would really love to hear your thoughts on that one.
Sure. Well, you know, the main thing is just kindness, just to have empathy and be kind. And it's just the little things you could do. You know, I'm a vegan. Both my wife and I are vegans. But, boy, we started out 30 years ago saying, we laugh about it now when we think about it, but 30 years ago we said, how about we just eat meat once a day? And then once a day became once a week, and then before you know it, you know, it was gone. So, you know, those meatless Mondays are a great thing, and every little bit, every choice you make really helps, and the animals will definitely appreciate it. And, you know, again, I advocated in my strip, but if you're thinking about getting a new best friend, you know, the shelter is the best place to go.
I did want to ask you about veganism. When people, because all the things I've read about, you say that you're a vegetarian, and I sort of adopt a don't ask, don't tell when it comes to whether somebody's a vegetarian or a vegan. But I wanted to ask, you mentioned that you've been a vegetarian for several decades. Is it the case that you were a vegetarian for a while and then converted to veganism later?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, for too long a time, you know, my wife and I always say that we were veganish because I would say for probably starting 10 years ago, we were vegan in our house, but, you know, still finding it hard when we were out. You know, we would try our best to be vegan, but every once in a while we would cheat with a piece of pizza or something like that. But about 2, maybe 3 years ago, we finally said, no, there's no reason to cheat anywhere, anytime. And you know, it gets easier and easier all the time. So I would say for the last 2.5 years, we've been totally vegan. And now we say, how come we didn't do that 10 years ago when we said we were going to? But yeah, no, we don't miss anything. I just feel like it gets easier and easier. There's more products that taste good. And there's no reason
Yeah, I remember you saying during your talk at, I think it was the Vegetarian Society of Hawaii, but you said that you thought that the chefs were going to be the ones to change the world for animals.
Yeah. I mean, the food just keeps on getting better and better, and there's more products, and just makes so much sense on so many levels.
Well, we are out of time, but I wanted to thank you so much again, Patrick, for coming on the show.
Thank you so much, Erin. It was a real pleasure.
And I also, of course, want to encourage everybody to check out the Mutz comic strips, either in your morning paper or online. And remember, there are also the books, the comic strip collections, as well as the children's books. And, of course, keep your eyes open for the Mutz movie. Now, we are going to take a really quick break, but we will be right back with Carrie Cronin and Lori Morrison. They are going to talk to us about the second annual Niagara Veg Fest. That's being held in St. Catharines, Ontario on Sunday, June 2nd between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m., so stay tuned. Welcome back to Animal Voices. We are here with Carrie Cronin and Lori Morrison, organizers of Niagara Veg Fest 2013. The festival will be held in St. Catharines, Ontario on Sunday, June 2nd between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. This is the festival's second year. So for the folks who didn't have the opportunity to attend last year, can you just give people a basic idea of what they can expect from VegFest 2013?
Sure. From VegFest 2013, well, we've moved into a larger location that's easily twice the size, and we have over 64 unique vendors at this point. I say that at this point because we are continuing to hear from vendors who are interested in coming in. So we've expanded the space and we're outdoors. And among the vendors, you can find food, exhibitors, clothing, information. Our local Rise Above full-service vegan restaurant is going to be there. Naked Sprout will be there with raw vegan food. And we have lots of animal advocacy groups like Cedar Row Farm Sanctuary, Niagara Action for Animals, and Mercy for Animals. So that just gives you a flavor of what the vendor area will be. And then we'll also have a roster of speakers that are running all day. Susie Costin, the sanctuary director for Farm Sanctuary, will be there. Linda Crago is a local head farmer at Treenswig Heirloom Vegetable Farms. J.L. Fields is a vegan lifestyle coach and educator. Michael Greger, Dr. Michael Greger, known to many people for his very enlightening and edutaining talks. He runs nutritionfacts.org, and he's with the Humane Society of the United States. And Victoria Moran, she's the author of Main Street Vegan and the director of Main Street Vegan Academy. She will also be speaking. And finally, we have Ginny Messina, is a registered dietitian and co-author of Vegan for Life. So that's our exciting speaker lineup this year.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. And while they all sound awesome, I do have to make a plug for Dr. Michael Greger, because I actually saw him at an Ottawa event a month or so ago. And I think he did the same talk that he's going to be doing for you guys. And he totally blew my mind. Like, I'd always heard that he was entertaining, but he was freaking hilarious.
Yeah, he's a very good speaker.
And just as a little teaser, he actually shows images of cancer cells like bursting into flame from the power of vegan blood. And that's sort of a joke. That's sort of a joke, but it's not that much of an exaggeration. So I have to tell you, go see his talk and judge for yourself.
Oh, yeah. I feel like I'm a member of his fan club. I was very excited when he was able to come in.
So there's vendors, speakers, and I think you also said there were food demonstrations?
Yeah, J.L. Fields will be doing a food demonstration. The title of her talk is Healthy Food Preparation for the Busy Non-Cook, Tips and Tricks for a Balanced, Compassionate Diet.
And among the vendors, now I know that at least at most of the veg fests I've been to, the big highlight of the vendors is the food, all the food that's going to be available. So can you talk to people a bit about what kind of food they can expect to try?
Yeah. So as I said, Rise Above is a full vegan service restaurant in St. Catharines. He will be serving brunch at the festival. We also have the Naked Sprout, and they're well known for things like raw kale salad, rubbed kale salad is what they call it. As well, Happy Vegan Kitchen will be there, and Health Nut, she does raw vegan nut cheeses.
Ooh, yum.
Yeah.
Those are all the rage these days.
They are, yeah, the nut cheeses. And Chef Mary Hulbert will be there as well, and Apocalypse Now is a vegan bakery, as well as Kind Food from Burlington. Many, many people are quite familiar with Kind Food and Kelly's Bake Shop. They'll have their brownies and cupcakes. New Moon Kitchen, such good cookies. I love their cookies.
Yes, and I have the double chocolate ones and the oatmeal ones in my freezer right now. So
is that right?
Yeah.
And then the Olive Tasting Room will have hors d'oeuvres and samples. And a lot of other food vendors will have samples. Mate Cafe will also be there. I think the last I heard from them, they're doing chicken Caesar, mock chicken, of course, Caesar wrap, and tacos. So,
and is Rise Above going to have their donuts?
I don't know if Rise Above is going to have their donuts.
Well, Rise Above, if you're listening to this, you should have your donuts, because I remember when they started selling their donuts, I think it was like within 24 hours, everybody in the country had heard about it.
Yeah.
Every vegan in the country anyway. It was like, vegan yeast donuts, what?
How's that working?
For those who did attend last year, you wanted to warn them that the venue has changed. So where are you this year, and why did you feel that you wanted to make that switch?
So we're downtown in St. Catharines Farmers Market building, located at 91 King Street. And we changed venues because, quite frankly, the building that we were in, for those people who were there last year, it was just too small. We were overwhelmed with the response. Honestly, when Carrie and I came up with this idea, we thought, yeah, you know, if our friends tell two friends and the vendors tell two friends, yeah, maybe we could get four or 500 people would come out. Yeah, that sounds like fun. And we had a door count of close to 1,300 people. And it was crowded. It's a good problem to have, but no less a problem that we had to figure out. And so we've moved it to a Sunday. It was Saturday last year. So we've moved it to a Sunday, and we'll be in the Market Square, which is a wonderful barn kind of shaped building that's glass enclosed, and the sides of the building roll up. Not the sides, but they're garage doors that roll up. So it's very spacious and airy, and it kind of feels like you're outside, but it's still covered and enclosed. And right next door is a historical building that has a theater in it, and we'll have the speakers in there. And then as well outside, there will be children's activities. So we're having face painting, seed potting station, activity sheets for coloring, and we have some local musicians that will be coming as well, doing some acoustic accompaniment to the day. Actually, you know what? I'm going to pass it over to Carrie, and she can tell you a little bit more about the music that will be there.
Hi, sure. We've got a couple of local artists coming to play. We've got the Niagara String Band, who just do a wonderful sort of folk-type music, and they're really quite lovely, great at a festival. And we've also got Jamie Goddard, one of our local musicians, who's also a wonderful advocate and activist in all sorts of causes, including animal rights, and he'll be playing as well throughout the day.
And who is your target audience for VegFest? Like, I know that sometimes people think these sorts of events are specifically targeted to vegans, but I don't think that's the case with this VegFest, correct?
Absolutely not. We are hoping that, of course, the vegans will come and that vegetarians will come, but we are also really, really excited to welcome people who are veg curious, as we like to call it. People, perhaps, whose doctors have said, you know, I think you need to be eating more fresh vegetables in your diet, or people who just want to, you know, look at different healthier options, whether it's for health reasons or environmental reasons. So we want to create a welcoming, non-judgmental, fun atmosphere for everybody to come and enjoy the day.
So say I'm a hardcore carnivore and my veg curious friend or girlfriend or boyfriend wants to drag me to VegFest. What can you say to me that will convince me that I will enjoy myself?
You're going to have a great time. You're going to get one of those mile-high brownies from Kind Food and Kelly's Bake Shop, and you're not going to know what hit you. It is fabulous, delicious. There's going to be incredible food, really interesting, nice people to talk to and listen to, music. We're looking at hopefully a sunny, wonderful day in the Niagara region. It's a great day out.
Okay. And can you guys tell me a little bit about yourselves? You were the ones that conceived of this event originally last year. So what motivated you to put it on?
Sure. Well, Laurie and I have traveled to a number of different veg fests in North America. We've been, of course, to the one in Toronto. We've been down to D.C. for theirs. And we started to talk about, why don't we have one here in Niagara? We have a great community of people who are interested in these issues. We also have a wonderful growing region. This is a wonderful place in Canada to get amazing fresh fruits and vegetables. So it just seemed to make sense to us that we could plan something like this and put it on. So, yeah, it just started with an idea one day driving back from the an event in Toronto, and we just took it from there.
And how about you yourselves? Like, do you organize events for a living, or are you the producers or retailers of some of the vegan foods that will be on display at the event?
No, not at all. In fact, our day jobs have absolutely nothing to do with this. We both work at Brock University. I'm a professor and chair of the art department, and Lori is the head of a department in the library. So this is purely our sort of second hobby, I guess, or a second full-time job that we're not doing for pay. We're really just doing it because we love to do it. We love to meet new people and be involved in community activities and just celebrate all the wonderful things that are going on in Niagara around these topics.
And some of the audience members might recognize Carrie's name because she has actually been on Animal Voices before, because you are a professor at Brock, as you mentioned, and you were on Animal Voices a couple of years ago talking about animal activism and visual culture. So listen to that interview if you want to see what Carrie does for her day job.
Great. Thanks so much.
I guess my next question is, what were some of the reactions to last year's VegFest? Like you said that you're trying to attract people that maybe are just interested in veganism or plant-based diets and they're not fully immersed in them yet. So did you get the sense that the messages that the event was trying to get across were getting across? Were people receptive? Did they like the food?
Absolutely. Yeah, last year the response was really, really positive. People were really, really enjoying themselves. What we saw happen afterwards, and this is one of the reasons we were doing this festival, is that connections were made. Different businesses or organizations or individuals across the Niagara region are doing all these really great things, but they often didn't know about one another. So they found each other at VegFest, and over the last year, we've seen these connections sort of solidify. So, for example, Tree and Twig Heirloom Organic Vegetable Farm now supplies Bamboo Natural Foods and Rise Above with wonderful greens and produce, and that wasn't happening before. So those kinds of connections were made. We've just seen also an explosion in downtown St. Catharines of an awareness and interest in veganism or plant-based diets. So, of course, we have Rise Above, our 100% vegan restaurant, but a lot of other restaurants are starting to cater to vegans. We're seeing vegan menus pop up at places like The Office, Tap and Grill. That never used to happen before. So in the last year, we have seen definitely this ripple effect, I think, of some of these conversations that started perhaps at VegFest.
And were you guys on the ground? So did you actually get to mingle with people and get to see some positive reactions from individual people when they say ate one of the Mile High cupcakes or anything like that?
Well, I was down in the speaker hall last year, and I definitely saw positive reactions to people just absolutely riveted listening to our speakers, watching the film, just really, really absorbing the message. But I'm going to pass it back to Lori, who was up in the vendor hall, and she can tell you a bit about that experience.
Hi. It was pretty amazing in the vendor hall. Just many of the, you know, tried and true vegans in the community, we were all looking at each other saying, where did all these people come from? All these people are interested in veganism, plant-based diet, animal rights, environmental rights. Yes, all of these people are interested and want to know. And then watching the reactions as people, you know, tried Kyle's tacos. Really? Really? Vegan? Oh, okay, it's really good. And it's so much fun to see that reaction from people who are either vegans and saying, oh, wow, I didn't know about Rise Above, or people who aren't and saying, I didn't know that it could be this good. I mean, that's, again, one of those reasons why we do it, is because our own experience, as we learned about and became vegan years ago, that it's not, you know, it's not beans and rice.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cashew cream sauce over handmade gnocchi. That's one of Kyle's signature dishes. It's amazing. So the vendor hall was a lot of fun to be in throughout the day.
Well, I actually like beans and rice, but I don't know. I think that cashew cream over gnocchi sounds pretty good, too.
I do, too. But you know, the stereotype is that it's not good. That somehow you have to leave your taste buds behind and deprive yourself. No, it's the opposite.
Yes, exactly.
It's really amazing.
Okay, so say some people that are listening are like, wow, that sounds like so much fun. And I wish I could go, but, you know, I live really far away. So can people make a sort of mini vacation about it? Because I think that there are lots of cool things to see in Niagara. And I also believe your website offers some suggestions for where to stay, etc.
Absolutely. In fact, right within walking distance, a few blocks away, there's a B&B called the Heritage House that offers a vegan breakfast. And we also know of other accommodations in the area that are doing the same thing. It is part on the website, so you could make this part of a destination. The wine region offers lots of vegan-friendly wineries that you can go to, and that's listed again on our website. And Friday night, if you want to make it for the weekend, Friday night is Niagara Action for Animals has its annual Party for the Paws fundraiser. Again, that's listed on our website. You can find out more about it there. And then they're just, it's the Niagara region, so there's all kinds of wonderful outdoor activities, bike rentals, lots of hiking trails. The Shaw Festival, of course, is here and up and running.
And I heard there's a big waterfall somewhere around there, too.
there's a big waterfall. How can we forget that? Of course. You know, the park is just stunning this time of year. And for people who aren't familiar with the region, that starts in Fort Erie and goes all the way down along the river, all the way to Niagara on the Lake. That whole area is parkland. And a lot of people don't realize that it's just, it's quite a beautiful and picturesque drive. And, of course, this is the War of 1812 bicentennial, and there are lots of events taking place along the parkway and along the river, reenactments that people can take part of as well. Well, I guess not take part of. They can observe.
Yeah, I wonder what would happen if you just like to tried to run in on somebody's reenactment of the War of 1812. I would run in and be like, stop this nonsense.
Stop it.
Let's go eat some vegan cupcakes and try and get along.
That's right. Have a vegan cupcake.
Now, I understand that VegFest is doing a partnership with Community Care. Can you talk about that a bit?
Sure. Community Care is a local organization that we have partnered with. So we're doing a food donation drive at the festival. And for every food donation that attendees bring, we'll be giving them a raffle ticket.
Oh, nice. And what sorts of prizes can they win?
They'll get a ticket for a prize for all the VegFest items that we're selling at the store. So we have a water bottle, bamboo cutlery, and a T-shirt and sticker. So that's everything that's going to be in the giveaway tote bag for the raffle prize. And then we also have an additional number of raffles as well. People can buy raffle tickets for a number of items. So the Shaw Festival is one of them. We have a tour of Frog Pond Winery, a tour for 10. And we also have a catered dinner for 4 from Natural Chef Niagara.
And they actually come into your house for that one, as I understand. Is that right?
That's right. And Salad Master as well is a catered dinner for 8. And we also have a very exciting donation from our local photographer artist, Amy Friend. She has donated a framed photo that's actually sitting on our dining room wall, keeping it safe until a week from now. And it's, I mean, I want to win this. Of course, I'm not going to be putting my name in, but it is a really stunning photograph that she has generously donated. So we have some really great raffle prizes.
Okay, we are running out of time, so I'm just going to ask you to add any information that we may have missed, and also to let people know where they can find your website, maybe a Facebook page if you've got one. And I think you also made a brief reference to the merchandise that you guys are selling yourselves. And I noticed you had like an online shop with your T-shirts and other cool stuff. So maybe just talk about that stuff and anything else you can think of.
Sure. So starting with how to find out more about us, we're niagaravegfest.com. We have a Facebook page, Niagara Veg Fest, and our Twitter is at Niagara Veg Fest. And a couple of other things just to note, the first 100 people to line up on June 2nd will receive a free tote bag with items from Rise Above. There's a coupon, and the Naked Sprout has a $10 coupon in it, as well as a little sample soap and other kind of exciting little goodie items that I won't give that away too much, but little items in it as well. What we have for sale, you're right, it is up online in our VegFest general store, and that's linked from our website. So we have T-shirts and bamboo cutlery and water bottle and stickers and a tote bag.
And where did you get all that swag, by the way? I was noticing that the shirts, for example, are like organic cotton made in Canada, and that was... You know, I always think that ethical events have trouble getting swag because it's hard to find ethically produced swag. So where'd you get that stuff?
You're very wise. Yes, it was very difficult. We did search high and low and for a very, very long time to try to find a union-made Canadian ethical T-shirt. And we're very happy that we were able to find the company is called Ethica. And they're made in Quebec in a unionized shop environment. And that we actually both have a T-shirt from another organization that was using them. So we know from our own experience that they're really good quality. They wash well. We're very excited. But you're right. It's very difficult to find, especially Canadian. So we're very happy about that. And it does. It takes a little bit of effort to pull this together for the items that we have for sale. But we wanted to do that. We're very proud of the... I love our logo. Mm-hmm. And wanted to have it on a few things for people to take away with them. And we don't run this at a profit. And we will always, if I haven't said it before, it's free, the entire event. The speakers, there's no charge to come. And we want to make sure that we can help maintain that. And so one of the ways we can do that is by, you know, having some items that people can purchase to help keep the Veg Fest in the years to come, keep it free.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a great way that we're hoping that people will help support us.
But I believe you guys also have some sponsors that are a big sort of linchpin in keeping the event going.
Absolutely. I can't believe we've gone this far into the interview and not talked about how we couldn't do it without them. And I think that was something that was really surprising to us the first year out when we put this out there and thought, well, maybe we'll get some sponsors. And we're very happy to say that Bamboo Natural Food Market is our local organic and almost largely vegan health food store. They have come back as our founding sponsor, and Rise Above as well is a sponsor this year, the Naked Sprout, and Kind Food as well. Kind Food and Kelly's Bake Shop from Burlington is back as well. And then other new sponsors, Salad Master and Nature's Roots. And Truly Organic is a Niagara-based company that does superfoods. And I don't know if you've heard of Tower Garden. It's a way, if you want to do gardening but you don't have a whole lot of space, it's these vertical gardens. And a yoga studio, the owner is vegan, and she's just starting up a yoga studio in Niagara Falls. We're very excited because we have a media sponsor as well this year, Intrigue Media has come on board, and Niagara Action for Animals, of course, is back. They're a core piece of what makes this happen every year. We really appreciate their support. And last but not least, and certainly not least, the City of St. Catharines, we applied for funding last year, and they provided some sponsorship. Oh, and we have about 30, 40 volunteers that are going to be at the day helping make it happen and directing people and helping people find their way. So those folks are very important to us.
Well, we're just about out of time, but before I go, I do want to remind all attendees of the upcoming Niagara Veg Fest 2013 to visit the Animal Voices table, because we will be there. And other than that, I guess I just want to say that I'm sure it's going to be an absolutely amazing event, and I want to wish everybody involved the very best of luck.
Well, thanks very much, Erin.
You have been listening to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto and CFBU 103.7 FM in St. Catharines. And yes, that is home of Niagara Veg Fest 2013, among many other excellent things. If you missed the first half of the show with Patrick McDonald, that's the creator of Mutt's Comics, or also, if you just really like the show and you want to listen to it again, the show will join nearly 400 others in our archives on our website at animalvoices.ca. And no downloading necessary. The newfangled technology on our website now allows for point-and-click listening. I should also note that if you have a particular interest in animal advocacy through art, there's a number of interviews you would like. We actually interviewed Dan Peraro of Bizarro Comics a while back, artist Bob Timmins, artist Amanda Mokel, and many others. Thank you very much to the whole Animal Voices team. If you have questions, comments, or show ideas, please contact us at animalvoices@gmail.com. I'm Erin O'Sullivan. Thanks for listening.